Session number 16723, George Lambert, Reel 3.
Mr. Lambert, Reel 3. You were put in the Pioneer Platoon, Mr. Lambert. Can you describe what the Pioneer Platoon was and what it did?
Well, a Pioneer Platoon in an infantry battalion, apparently before the war and in regular times, was a platoon that had a section of tradesmen and a section of boys for demolition and a section for labouring or sanitary duties and things like that, Jones. But we weren't quite a full strength in this particular case. But the rank in the peacetime apparently is a Pioneer Platoon Sergeant, which was when I joined there, that was all put to one side because of the activity. And we had a Sergeant Davidson, who was the sergeant. And we had, I think, there's three or four of us were bricklayers, two or three joiners. And we had a sign writer, Jones. And, of course, you had to adopt yourself to do bits and other pieces, electrical works and so on, and other things. But basically, being a bricklayer and a joiner, well, you were able to do with this other stuff and the way of the battalion needed. But it was mostly, we spent a lot of time making signs and doings and normal works for. But we did our own training just the same as the other lads, but being in the headquarters, you weren't so strict on training as what the company boys were then, you know. And of course, when you were moving, you were necessary for helping out on various things, one to get the cook houses ready and things and that, you know, don't move around. But it paid off for me in the sense that I was able to not keep me trade going, but to be able to keep my mind going on other things, you know.
Did you get a tradesman's army pay?
No, it was just the same. You just carried on with the same normal pay.
So what were you doing, erecting things, and what kind of work might a pioneer section that you were in would do?
In the headquarters, when we were in headquarters, we were responsible for the sanitation of the headquarters section, you know, doing this. But the other companies looked after themselves, but we were responsible for doing. But as I say, we made a lot of, had all the signs made, or wherever you went, or doing this. And the officers always wanted something in it. One particular instance, we had an officer called Tankerville, with the names familiar for the Northeast. He was about 6'7" or something, and of course his bed wasn't long enough, so we had to extend his bed for him, you know, his camp bed. Doing this. But them little things.
And did you have some initial training, I mean, other than the military training, or weapons training, you just basically, when did you work?
Not until later on. We later on in the war, we were appointed to be use the Piat, but that was later on in the war, the doings. Actually, it was for Sicily, where we were taken away, we had to go in, we were trained for to fire the Piat and one thing or another, but normally we were just for the HQ.
Who was the commander of the Pioneer Platoon at that time?
Sergeant Davidson. And we came under the Mr. Love. He was just a lieutenant then. Was doing the quartermaster. We came more or less. There was the captain of the HQ, but we seemed to always get our instructions or were responsible to the quartermaster.
And what were they like, these people?
Oh, very good. Well, you know, I've had your ups and downs, but little nick that, but no, good. As I say, as even still to that day, drink never affected me. I always behaved myself like I tried to. Once you got on the move, as we went over to France, as I say, and I think it was Boxing Day.
Before we come to then, how did the platoon move? Did you have your own truck?
I had our own transport. I had a 3-tonner, and usually, in some cases, we've got the use of a 1,500 weight, but we always had a 3-tonner for carrying all the things around.
What kind of things would you be carrying?
We carried all our own stuff. We carried all our own kit bags and all our own tools and everything in the doings. As we moved as a platoon, you know, we had all our stuff was in our own transport. So whenever we stopped, we didn't have to look for it. We had our own truck. The only thing is, MT section had to appoint a driver for us. We didn't have our own driver.
The kind of equipment and materials you would be carrying would be
what? Picks and shovels and spades and joiners tools, full sets of joiners tools, you know, and Sylvester's, you know, just in case you need them. You know.
At Morton in the Marsh, where were you housed there? Where were you barracked?
Well, we were based in a farm. We weren't based, the headquarters is in Kitebrook House, but I don't know where the signal company, where the signal section was, but we were in a farmhouse away from the headquarters. Some of us in the house and some in the barn, you know, doing, but it was very, very cold, because every morning you had to break the ice on the drum outside, catching the rainwater to get water to get washed with, doing, you know, and it was very, really cold.
In the house, were you sleeping, what, in...
Just on the floors. It was palliasses again.
Was it an empty house, or...?
Yeah, doing palliasses.
And where, again, did you get your meals? And where
we made we got our own then. We made our own there, doing...
And the whole platoon was in this farmhouse
barns? Yeah.
How did you get on with the people of Morton?
Very well. The people in Morton, in Little Compton, we used to go to church there on a Sunday morning. With being away from headquarters, we didn't. There's always this zone, but because we were away from them, you were expected to your church service. So we used to go to Little Compton Church, and the people in the village there used to wait for us and invite us home for a cup of tea and biscuits. So we got on quite well with those zones.
And you did mention the fact you still had to do the military training.
Well, yeah, you did your marching and doing bits and pieces, but it was the battalion, it was mostly the company that, the headquarters was getting themselves organised for to get themselves go abroad, and we had to get ourselves organised to get all the stuff that was, well, as I said, even in them days, we made the crosses long before we went over, the ones. There was crosses made to take with us.
This is the crosses for graves?
Yeah.
And these were done in England before you went to France?
Took some with us, yes.
Did this bring to you the fact that war is dangerous?
Yeah. Yeah, do you want? That, well, you had to be prepared for any doings, but... We made all sorts of signs, little road signs with the arrows pointing different ways, you know, and they were all made. You had to have them all ready. And
these would be pointing the way to headquarters, or?
Whichever way they were doing, yeah. Doing that, TT69 and what have you.
You mentioned the sign writer. He would...
David Walton. He came from... either Bladen or Dunstan he came from, I think it was. But he was a damn good sign writer. He came in very handy later on. and he was a very, very quiet sort of person, but a damn good sign writer. When it comes to staff cars and things like that, and the battalion transport, we just used to stencil all the names on, but when it comes to the staff car and things, Dave would get the job of putting the right numbers on it and put them on properly. But the likes of all the transport, it was all just stenciled on.
Do you remember the names of any of the other men, bricklayers or joiners?
There was Dennis Thompson, Arthur Thompson, Tommy Crawley, a lad called Jimmy Crummy, who went over to France with us, but he left us after that. Di Jones, Len Green, the one lad came from Luton. He joined us over there later on in life. His unusual name, Felix Raymond Bruce King.
Good chaps?
Oh, they're all good chaps. He was a joiner. They're all good chaps. You had to get on. There's no good booking. You know, you had to get on. Jones.
You came to go to France. Did you go ahead of the main battalion to France?
No, we all went across together, all across on the same ferries.
And it was a particularly bad winter.
It was a real bad winter that time.
Do you recall the move itself?
Just, not really, just everybody, it was such a cool weather and you're doing it and you were off. And the only thing I can remember is crossing over on the ferry, going over on the ferries, the doings. Then finished up in a very small village in the Lille area. I can't remember the name. One name I can remember was the one called Sujely Ganilon, but it was only because it was such an unusual name that doings.
What was your impressions, your first impressions of France when you landed?
Well, one of the things that hit us first was once you got bedded down with your palliasses and whatnot, we went out and we found a place like a basement where the French, where you had all the chickens lined up on a wire by the feet, and they cut the tongues and we made the flap and bleed to death, and we thought that was... Well, I was one of them. Thought that was damn well most cruel. What the hell would come into it? Because that didn't sort of thing didn't happen. That was me. What the hell were coming into? I thought it was a bit barbaric.
Were the French friendly towards you?
In the CS, yeah.
Did you get invited to the homes?
No. No, not in them days. I think one of the things that, a little wage we had was, as I say, I had about 3 and 6 months or something, but over there, when we got over there and you wanted a change, you could get an egg, a few chips, a glass of cognac and a glass of coffee and a cup of coffee for the value of twopence halfpenny, which we thought was fantastic.
How did the men take to the French drink? Different from the...
Once a lot of the lads got over there and they got under the cognac and the different drinks, oh dear. They would drink it just like beer, and of course they soon learnt the lesson. One little incident where one chap was drunk, he was drunk that much that when he had to come in front of the captain, I think it was Captain Beatty, they'd bring him out in the morning. They'd give him a drink of tea or a drink of water or something, and he was drunk again. So that happened. The captain never saw him for about 3 days. So at the finish, he says, "I think you've suffered enough. I'll let you off." That's similar.
You don't recall on landing in France that you went to an area where you concentrated first before you moved up to Lille.
No, I can't. No,
can't remember that. Can you?
No, I can't remember that. Not in this particular fee. I did in later on, but not in this particular.
What were you doing then in the area of Lille, in that area? What were you doing?
Well, we're just more or less getting ready for the move forward, on any doings. And we were, the battalion actually moved up into the Poperinge area, where it was the RAMC that took all the boys up, you know. Then we followed on. They went up with us.
Do you recall digging an anti-tank ditch at this time, prior to the Germans, you know, the war really beginning on?
Not really. My first christening, as the saying is, was once we got into Belgium and we were in the Vimy area. One of the DRs got killed, ADR, dispatch rider. So he got caught with a mortar shell on the roadside and he was killed. And I was one of the ones that was chosen to bury him, which was my first christening of burying. And not a very pleasant task, you're not used to it. Anyhow, we did our job and buried the lad there and then, and of course the sergeant took his tallies and whatnot. But the officer, I can't remember his name, came and said, "There's a glass of rum for you, you know, we've got a glass." And he says, "Use your own words then, but don't bloody well expect it every time." And that was me christening into...
Was he particularly horribly wounded? Was it?
Oh, yes, he was badly mauled. I can't remember his name, I don't.
No, it's difficult. Seeing that for the first time, how did that affect you?
You know, what's it all about, you know? That's when I think I really realised that I was in the... Things would begin to happen.
Didn't feel nauseated by this.
I was actually sick, to be quite honest.
What's the process of burying a soldier like that? Is it, do you wrap him or?
You just had to bury him there and then, if they were to do it. In most cases, there was nothing, you just dug the hole and put him in, marked his grave.
And you'd mark it from his tags? And
the sergeant took all them, you know, and handed them into the officer.
And was this when your first cross went up?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. It'd
be a temporary grave?
Yeah, they're just temporary graves.
What's the process? Does someone come along and...
Well, what do you call them? The cemetery people, grave commission comes along later on and they take them up and transfer them in to the war cemetery. I don't know which one you would go to at all, but that's it.
Were most of the party affected in the same way as yourself, the burial party?
No, everybody spread about, and this had happened. We were close by at the Dunes, and we were Dunes, so we were. I was one that was picked out of the Dunes, because I was only a private then. Dunes picked out and had to do me duties. I suppose that it hardens you to a certain extent, but as I say, I was sick at doing that, and then later on, learned you kept your head down, learned you to do it.
So this was your first casualty, to say, in the Vimy area, where the battalion was involved in some of the fighting around that area.
Yeah.
What are your memories of that?
Not a lot, to be quite honest, because shortly after that, it was a question of making back. We knew we were more in the move. We didn't know. Dunkirk was an unknown word, not even heard of then. Not in my case, anyhow. And what was happening was that we were moving during the night and bogging down during the day, and then we were actually doing a zigzag, making our way back to Dunkirk. Shortly after that, you know, but it was mostly walking at night time, bedding down during the day. But then one little incident when I don't know where it was, mind, but we were on the move, and the Northumberland Fusiliers, they set up their machine gun posts on the roadside, and in the ditch on the roadside, and Jerry had pretty heavy, didn't spot them, and he dropped the mortars right on the road, and that was a real carnage, you know. And that was another time when I had to put all them bodies, well, what was doing, is carry them and put them into a barn.
And again, quite a horrific mutilated.
Yeah, it was a.
Is there, it's not a very pleasant subject, but is there a situation where you can't even identify, you don't know who it is you're picking up, or?
Well, arms off or legs off, you know, doing, but I kind of say that you kind of didn't recognize because you didn't even know who they were, you know, doing that.
So it was rather an unpleasant part to your job.
Not one of the main jobs, but it was the Pioneer Platoon's responsibility to bury the dead of its battalion. Possible.
in the retreat, going back, did you come into contact with the refugee problem?
Oh, yeah. Well, two or three times, a couple of times. They were all on the roads moving. And, of course, Jerry was strapping the roads and doing, because we were mixed in with them. So they didn't, you couldn't care less, you know, but a couple of times at strapping the roads.
How did you feel? What was your feeling towards, you know, these people that were moving in such sad circumstances, desperate circumstances?
Well, I would think that they were on the move and we wanted to be out as well, so that it's a problem as well as ours, you know, doing that. I would just look after yourself as best you possibly could.
Could you move reasonably well, although there was this?
Well, see, we did all our movement and most of our movement at night time in the dark and doing this. That eventually got down to Dunkirk and got onto dunes, and that was, well, you kind of forget it. There's all these people crammed up on the beach and Jerry coming down with having a go at it, you know, doing. But came out on June the 2nd, actually.
What was the beach scene, as you recall it? When you arrived at the beach, what was the scene?
Just bodies, people just lying, trying to lie still and the least movement if possible and waiting. When a boat came off the water, run towards the water and crawl and walk, wade through it to try and get onto it and one thing or another.
These are people going off the beaches,
trying to get onto small boats because they couldn't get in onto pier, you know, the ones. But I came off on June the 2nd, I couldn't tell you the name of the boat.
Did you come off from the mole?
I came off the pier and jumped onto the boat from there, the ones. And I think, I'm sitting here, I think I might be bragging, but I think I came up for one of the last boats to come off on June the 2nd.
Did you come off as a platoon, or were you...
Anybody, all Tom, Dick and Harry. Fortunately, I was with one lad of our platoon, a lad called Bill Bell, we came off together.
Did you think you were going to get off?
No. We prayed. That was one time that... But I hadn't had anything to eat for 2 days. And I think the last thing I had before I left France was a tin of sardines and a spoonful of jam. And that didn't go down very well. But that was I hadn't had anything for about 2 days, I think. And all I can remember on the boat was when we got on the boat and got settled down and it moved, was a French lad, soldier. And what we did do was two of us laid one way and one laid in the middle, let the Frenchman in the middle, and we put a great coat over the top of the three of us and we just slept. And the next thing we knew was that this lad had woke up and said, "Dover," and he was pointing towards, and it was Dover. And he opened a bottle that he was carrying of cream de menthe. And I vowed I would never drink it again. It just burnt my stomach because I hadn't had anything to eat for about, as I said, 2 days plus that. And we drank that as his recommender. It just about burnt my stomach. And I said, I vowed I would never drink it again. Little incidents that happened.
What was the reception when you landed?
Well, there were people lined up on the, when we got off the boat and got on the train, people were landed up. We just had to walk and get on the nearest train. People there dishing cups of tea out for us, and then just settled down.
Did you feel a defeated army? Were you
Yeah, mine, I'll be quite honest, I'm not telling a word of a lie, I brought my rifle back with us. And that was one of the very few, I think, and I brought me one rifle back.
Then it had to be handed in.
Oh, yes, I do. But I brought it back. And went into a camp somewhere, I can't remember that, because fagged out, and they dished us out with a razor. Everybody got a razor blade, but you had to share a razor with three people. And consequently, by the time we got back with the battalion properly, and moved down to Lyme Ridges, I'd adopted to what they call a dirty shave.
No, what was that?
It's all scabs all over your face, Jones. And
were you when you got to this first camp, which you say you don't remember much of? Were they sorting you out into your regiments?
Yes,
and Dunes,
try and work into Dunes. I've got a recollection of, because it was so Dunes, finished up in Knutsford before I went down to.
Did you go home?
No.
You hadn't gone on leave at all?
No.
So it was straight off the boat to this camp where you saw it, then up to...
Then we backed the battalion before I got any leave.
And where were the battalion then?
Well, by the time we got ourselves sorted out, we went down to Lyme Ridges on defence work, because it was a question of getting everybody... I would imagine getting everybody on the coast as soon as possible in case you followed us across the zones, or try to follow us across. But we went to Lyme Ridges.
What was the condition of the battalion when you got to Lyme Ridges?
Well,
yes, you must have lost a lot of men.
We lost a lot of men, Jones. It had to be reformed, Jones.
Where were the drafts coming from?
Well, I would imagine places like Bransworth Castle and things like that, you know, because we started off at Geordie Company, but we started getting mixed up then, Jones.
Did you get Scots coming amongst you?
Not a lot.
The material and equipment, what was the state of the battalion as regards that?
It had to be re-equipped, more or less completely re-equipped, to transport and everything.
So you'd have very little.
Just more or less come back with what you stood up in.
What were you doing at Lyme Ridges?
Defence work. One company is at Charmouth. The four companies had different areas. We were in Lyme Ridges headquarters, and our little job is, if anything had happened, was a little beer called Seaton. And we had to go down there. If there's an emergency, we had to go down into this little bay at a place called Seaton. And we thought, you went down steps and all what to get into it. And said, well, if anybody comes in, how the hell are we going to get back up there? Well, that was our position. And when everybody had a rifle, of course, and you had five rounds of ammunition, you only had when you were there. But you were only allowed to use it if the officer told you. So if a jury was coming up the street, you had to wait to catch an officer to ask if you could shoot him. You know what I mean? I mean maybe a little bit offensive there. But
were you just literally in a defensive situation? Were you digging defences or
no.
Preparing defences?
Well, the companies might have been, but we weren't. We were just, as I say, we were still carrying on our normal duties of...
The normal pioneering.
The normal pioneer stuff.
Had there been any changes in the commands of the battalion? Who was commanding the battalion at this time?
When we went over, it was Colonel Simpson, and he got moved. And we had Colonel Percy. I think he came back with us. I'm not quite sure. But Major Scott, he was one of the companies. He came back. I don't know whether he came to H. I don't know when he came to HQ, but I can't remember when. We had Mad Robbo Robinson, and two Robinsons.
Why Mad Robbo?
Well, he was the reason why he was called Mad Robbo at a later date was because he. He thought he was a commando, and he used to try and get the boys to do a lot of stupid things. But I had dealings with him later on in the conversation.
Platoon commander, had he changed? Are you still the same platoon commander?
Well, Sergeant Davidson was still with us at that time. And then I don't know where he left us, but when the... He was still with us when we went over to... He was still with us then.
What was your accommodation? How were you living on the coast?
We were living in a small hotel place in Lanridge's. And I still had me dirty shave. And I went to Sick Parade to see about it, and they said, oh, we'll have to send you up to somewhere, up in Cheshire somewhere, to a skin hospital. I said, I'm not going to a skin hospital if I can avoid it. Give us a few days. So what I used to do was go into cook house and get a boiling water from them. And I went to chemist and got a jar of Vaseline. And I used to bathe my face as hard as I could, as much as I could bear. And then I saturated it with the Vaseline. And I cleared it myself. Otherwise I would have left the company, I left the battalion, and I would maybe not have got back again, and I didn't want to leave it.